Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome back to New Books and Historical Materialism. I am your host, Stephen Dozman. The Marxist revolutionary Leon Trotsky exerted a powerful influence on the world, even if his historical and theoretical contributions have often been downplayed, and people who wish to be associated with him are few and far between today. There are a number of factors that have contributed to this marginalization, but correcting it will require revisiting his thought in a careful and contextualized manner in order to better understand his ideas, salvage the underlying core, and adapt it for the 21st century. One person attempting to do this is Juan Del Mazo. In his new book, Hegemony and Class Struggle, Trotsky, Gramsci, and Marxism, originally written and published in Spanish before being translated by the author for the series Marx, Engels, and Marxism, the text spends the first two chapters revisiting Trotsky's developing thoughts on hegemony, political leadership, party vanguards, and bureaucracies, finding a highly dynamic figure whose thought reflected the changing times he was embedded in. Following this, Del Mazo returns to Gramsci's notebooks, carefully contextualizing the often critical remarks on Trotsky, cutting past surface appearances to find some key points of overlap in their thoughts on political revolution. The book ends with a series of reflections on the receptions of Trotsky and Gramsci, with one left on the margins of history and political theory, the other theorized to the point where his political commitments have often been made to disappear. In all this, Del Mazo encourages to see these figures in a new light, and in doing so develop a Marxist conception of class struggle that can help bring us into the 21st century. Juan Del Mazo is a freelance researcher and activist in Buenos Aires, Argentina. He is a frequent contributor to Left Voice. He is also a member of the editorial board of Ideas of the Left Weekly in Argentina. He is also the author of the following books: The Marxism of Gramsci in 2016, and Althusser and Manuel Sacristán in 2020, co-written with Ariel Petruccelli. Juan Del Mazo, welcome to the New Books Network.
I really thank you, Stephen. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, very excited to have you here. So for first question, I always like to have guests introduce themselves. So could you maybe tell us just a little bit about who you are as a scholar and what your work and research interests tend to focus on?
Okay, I'm an independent scholar. I don't speak English very fluent, so I ask for your patience. I will try to do my best. I'm militant in the Socialist Workers' Party in Argentina, PTS, Partido de los Trabajadores Socialistas, and we make the international newspaper network La Izquierda Diario, which in the United States makes Left Voice, my conference of Lake Boys are discussing a lot of questions related to the theme of our conversation now. And I was studying about the thought both of Gramsci and Trotsky a lot of years, writing some little pieces, articles, and then I started to try to develop this work in several books, which is one of them, Hegemony and Class Struggle.
Yeah, jumping right off of that, maybe just to start this conversation off, it's worth kind of getting on the table just a basic understanding of the core thesis of the book, which is that for you, Trotsky's theory of permanent revolution needs Gramsci's conception of hegemony as a sort of supplement in order to better understand what it is and how to implement it. So we'll tease out various aspects of that idea throughout the conversation. But to kick things off, could you give us just kind of a basic understanding of why you think these two theories complement each other in this way, or why Trotskyists need Gramsci?
Yes, I think both theories are talking about the problem of the dynamic of class struggle in relationship with other social strata which are oppressed by capitalism. It's not only a theory about the struggle of the working or industrial working class in itself, but both theories are trying to think the problem of the articulation you need to do between the working class and the peasants, social movements, women's movements, and other movements, which a composition a lot of times is of working class people in the social condition, but they are identifying themselves through another ideas or principles or issues, okay? So I think both theories, permanent revolution and hegemony, are trying to think this articulation in order to confront capitalism, avoiding both ways of identity politics, which separates the problems of the so-called minorities and the economicism or economic reductionism, which has a very limited conception of what working class struggle is.
Yeah, developing this a little more, one thing I found really interesting about the book is that in reading Trotsky and Gramsci together, you're kind of pulling them both in some unique directions. So on the one hand, Trotsky is often seen as merely just kind of a historical figure and kind of a relic at that by most mainstream historians. He's not often treated as a political theorist. On the other hand, Gramsci is treated as a theorist so theoretically abstract that his political militancy more or less disappears in a lot of discussion of him. So I'm wondering if you could maybe speak to that and how you're trying to, by reading them together, also reread them both separately in kind of a unique way.
Okay, I think Trotsky has been ignored as a theoretician, especially in academia, because his too closely tied to problems of political conjuncture or specific situations. And this link with politics has been considered as a kind of impediment to doing science or making substantial theoretical contributions. Well, I think these prejudices are clearly anti-Marxists, because for Marxists, the politics can be never be an impediment to theory. And in another hand, The case of Trotsky is very interesting because not all Marxist politicians have been theorists, people who make theory. Trotsky had made theory and have tried to make systematizations about important problems like the characteristics or the dynamics of the contemporary revolution. So it's a really leading figure if you want to think about the problem of revolution today. Notwithstanding, revolution today, it won't be exactly like Russian Revolution or the other revolutions of 20th century. I think in the case of Trotsky, there is a huge prejudice, which is a really good presented in the book of Emanuele Zaccarelli, who makes a lot of criticisms of about this situation, talking about the prejudices of academia and intellectuals as a kind of legacy of the influence of Stalinism. I think he's right in this issue. But now there's a very, new situation concerning Trotsky. There's new generations without the prejudices of the past, because a lot of experiences of the 20th century are not so present or so recognized. So Trotsky is now a new figure to a lot of people, especially young researchers or students or militants in social movements. And I think this is an opportunity to take his theory and use it again to think the actual problems of Marxism and class struggle. Concerning Gramsci, is like the opposite situation. Gramsci is a defeated leader. He couldn't make the revolution in Italy. Simultaneously, he had made very important reflections in the aspect of theory. He had talked about problems that another Marxist didn't think before. And there's this, there is this kind of contradiction in which he's used because of his theoretical approaches, but misrecognizing, forgetting his condition of a political militant, a political leader. So I think we can't read Gramsci without his political experience. The core of his reflections concerning problems like the state, no, like the problem of state, his its relationship with the masses, with the class struggle, all of these problems related to the question of integral state, for example, a very important concept from Gramsci, are related directly with the experience of the struggle against fascism in Italia, for example, in Italy. So we can't think Gramsci like he was a colleague in the university or just a researcher. And I think this overlap between Gramsci and Trotsky allow us think the Gramsci theory in a very more political way.
Yeah, so moving into the first chapter of the book, the first couple chapters are dedicated to kind of a very careful reading of Trotsky's writing throughout his life. To kick things off, you point out that hegemony as a concept or idea largely emerged in Russia, in pre-revolutionary Russia, and in left activist circles. What was the concept initially developed to address? Why did many activists in that area start turning to hegemony as a way of trying to understand what they were trying to do?
Okay. Originally, hegemony means leadership. The hegemon is a kind of chief in the Greek conception, the ancient conception. In Russian Marxism, the concept is re-elaborated, trying to think especially two problems. One, the role of the proletariat in a democratic bourgeois revolution, because Russian Marxists thought that the revolution against Tsarism should have a first stage or first moment to conquer the Constituent Assembly, the formal democracy, and the agrarian revolution, and the struggle for socialism should be more later in the years, no? The other question is the relationship between the working class and the peasants, because Russia was a country with a huge majority of peasants, and the working class couldn't do a revolution without the peasants. So the hegemony is a concept in first instance forced to think this problematic. The role of the proletariat in the Russian Revolution, especially thinking the relationship with the peasants.
Yeah, turning to Trotsky's own thinking, you kick off the discussion of Trotsky with kind of a sort of intellectual confrontation between Trotsky and Lenin. So Lenin put out his very famous text, What is to be Done, in 1902, and Trotsky responded in his work, Our Political Tasks, shortly after. And initially, Trotsky had kind of a very confrontational attitude towards Lenin. He really thought that there were some issues in Leninism or Bolshevism. Could you maybe speak to this early position Trotsky starts out in?
Yes, I think this young Trotsky of Our Political Tasks is a kind of autonomist Trotsky. His thinking is that Lenin has the project of being the dictator of a sect, leading a sect, and also Trotsky thought that the work, the political work of Marxists should be especially in the working class, not in the intellectuals, not in the peasants. This young Trotsky, it's a kind of a workerist, autonomist Trotsky, but and for this, because of that, Trotsky had some rejection against the concept of hegemony, because he thought that this was a kind of populist conception or a conception that wouldn't be correct to have a militancy in the working class. But Trotsky also had something very good in this period, in all this discussion, which Alain Brossat has called the Trotsky sociologism. This conception about the strength of the social movement, the strength of the movement that grows from below, abajo, below. Okay, I'm saying okay, below. I always confuse above and below. I'm trying to say movimiento desde abajo, below. So Trotsky never changed his idea about, in all his life, about the centrality that the independent struggle of the masses should be. In the more partidist and Bolshevik moments, Trotsky always had the idea that the mass mobilization, the spontaneity, all this was very important and was a core of his political theory, which is expressed in his balance of the revolution in 1905, around the question of the Soviets and the role of the Soviets, the workers' councils, like an institution of self-organization of the masses. He make a kind of incorporation of the problematic of hegemony through the experience of this revolution in 1905. And the problem of hegemony is linked in the Trotsky's thought to the question of the of a very consequent struggle of the working class, not only taking the demands of the peasants, but also putting his its own demands, defining its own demands with independence from the liberal bourgeoisie and other sectors.
Yeah, so moving along, so from this kind of early starting point you were outlining, Trotsky would have a sort of intellectual change of heart. While he did maintain some of his early commitments to working class organizing, he turned towards developing, most famously, his ideas around permanent revolution, but also he develops this idea of a sort of materialist hegemony, in this idea that working class organizing requires various sorts of material and institutional supports and structures, and saw Bolshevik and Soviet parties as possibly helping give that sort of organizing a place where it could kind of flourish and, you know, express itself. Could you maybe speak to this intellectual trajectory you would have leading up to 1917?
Okay. Trotsky made a confluence with the Bolshevik Party, but not exactly with all the party, but especially Lenin's April thesis. No, thesis, yes. And he, since that moment, Trotsky always talked about the polemics of the past with Lenin and other people in the Bolshevik Party, trying to say that it was polemics, necessary polemics in the moment when they discussed each other, but not important to the present, okay? Between 1917 and 1926-27, Trotsky is trying to don't talk about permanent revolution and the theory of Lenin or blah blah blah, because he was trying to make some political struggle through the Bolshevik Party around the concrete problems of the economy, of the relationship between the peasants and the workers under the NEP regime and other problems. But he always maintained the idea of the material basis of the hegemony, as you said, thinking in two aspects. One of them, the social strength of the proletariat inside the Soviet society, and the other, the question of self-organization, self-determination institutions like the Soviets, which were empty since 1924 because of the process of bureaucratization, and Trotsky in the 30s made the theory, create the theory of the political revolution against bureaucracy, proposing a Soviet democracy. Okay, all parties who that support the revolution should be legal, and the working class should have institutions to have the effective leadership in the Soviet society, social and politically. Okay, because Stalinism said, okay, you are the dominant class in the social basis, but the politics is ours.
Yeah, it's worth maybe turning to, in chapter two, you start looking at Trotsky's transition theoretically as he starts to respond to Stalinist bureaucratization. So on the one hand, you have Stalin, who is trying to assimilate Leninism to justify his own kind of takeover of the transition in the party and the bureaucratization. How did Trotsky's theory or idea of hegemony develop as it started to function as a critique of this bureaucratization?
Okay, I think Trotsky was thinking the problem of bureaucratization since 1923-24, but it has a growing development in the same way that the bureaucratization gets stronger. I think the concept of hegemony of Trotsky, it's a very interesting alternative to Stalinism, because he thought about the problem of the social weight of the working class is not good enough to make this class hegemonic. The working class must be dominant in the political way, but its leadership concerning the peasants must be a leadership based in the mutual good relation, and not imposed by authority, like was the forced collectivization and the implementation of the 5-year plans. So there is some kind of doubt or discussion about if Trotsky thought that in the 30s it was a real effective hegemony of the working class because of the dictatorship of the bureaucracy. So you had in the Soviet Union in the 30s a huge proletariat in industries, but there were not workers' democracy. So the conception of hegemony of Trotsky is linked to the idea of workers' democracy, and we cannot separate them.
Yeah, moving right along and to kind of tie things off with Trotsky here. So for you, you've been developing this idea of hegemony, not just as this kind of ethereal abstract policy, but as something embedded in various institutions. If I can quote you a bit, you write, quote, "For Trotsky, hegemony is a moment of an overall dynamic, which is that of permanent revolution. The relations between the two can be interpreted as a mirror image of those established by Gramsci. While in Gramsci's view, hegemony is the current form of permanent revolution, for Trotsky, it is only on the basis of a theory and strategy of permanent revolution that hegemony can be established as a way of developing workers' power instead of limiting it to a general democratic policy. So to close off the chapters on Trotsky, I'm wondering if you could maybe again kind of bring back what hegemony is for you and for Trotsky, you know, not this kind of abstract democratic sphere of political autonomy that has nothing to do with material conditions, but is very much a part of those material conditions.
First, it's important to say something about the conditions of the debate in Latin America. Here we have our Argentinian philosopher that we exported to you, Ernesto Laclau.
I thought of Laclau and Mouffe when I read that passage.
Ernesto Laclau is very influential also here, not only in Europe or in the academy in the United States. And my generation and people in the 80s grown up with the idea of the hegemony inside the bourgeois democracy, okay? No class struggle, no revolution, but we can get this, we can reach the socialism, making some radicalization of democracy, but not expropriating the bourgeoisie, okay? Ernesto Laclau and Chantal Mouffe, when they wrote Hegemony and Socialist Strategy, were thinking about something like that, okay? A kind of a left social democracy, like Mitterrand in the 80s, which it was a failed experience. And also in Latin America, particularly in Argentina, but also in Brazil, with the PT, with the experience of the Workers' Party of Lula, there is an idea about hegemony, which is the working class must not to take direct action, must do politics inside this political regime, making a party to go to elections and get votes and et cetera, and not the class struggle, not the direct action. This is the opposite of Trotsky's conception. Trotsky thought that the hegemony could only be achieved if the working class had a very, very consequent struggle using the direct action for its own demands and also for the demands of all oppressed people for reasons of gender or culture or wherever. And only in this way we can talk about a hegemony of the working class. So and also a thing more. This conception is linked with the problem of permanent revolution, as you say, because only going beyond the boundaries of the isolated demands, partial reivindications, the demands of more rights inside this democracy, which are necessary, but it's not good enough. Only going beyond that, we can think in building socialism or an equal society, an egalitarian society. So this conception of hegemony is more profound, more integral than this kind of only political conception of hegemony, which is making a discourse, a progressive discourse, so we can go to elections and get some votes or take the government and implement some rights, but not expropriate the bourgeoisie, not touch the economy. The economy is keeps in the same hands, and the only change is about discourse or some limited rights, okay?
Yeah, so moving on, in the next chapter, you start turning to Gramsci, and in particular, you focus on the various scattered passages throughout his prison notebooks where he talks about Trotsky. Gramsci was often very critical of Trotsky, and you do a lot of work to try and contextualize these remarks, understand what he might have had access to in terms of either articles about Trotsky or by Trotsky. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of kind of archival work, but to get to kind of some of the cores of Gramsci's critiques of Trotsky, which you argue are in many cases misreadings, but in any case, for Gramsci, Trotsky he saw as ironically a part of the transition towards bureaucratization in the newly established Soviet Union. And there's also a misreading on Gramsci's part, an imbalance between theory and practice that Gramsci saw and was perhaps part of this. So could you maybe speak to, you know, before getting to kind of trying to pull them together, what Gramsci thought of Trotsky and what we can get from these passages? Yeah.
I don't want to be a reductionist, but I think we can say that the Gramsci's views on Trotsky are heavily influenced by the Soviet leadership criticism of Trotsky in the mid-1920s. I'm thinking especially in a text from Bukharin. We say Bukharin here. You say Bukharin, Bukharin. Bukharin, this text is called The Theory of Permanent Revolution of 1924. In this text, there's a lot of arguments used later by Gramsci in the prison notebooks. This idea of an imbalance between theory and practice, which is used by Bukharin, saying that Trotsky used to make big pictures of the situation, of the general situation of capitalism, but couldn't identify the different moments and changes of relationship of forces, the development of revolution. Bukharin said that and opposed Trotsky to Lenin, okay? This is the basic approach that Gramsci take to make his criticism of Trotsky. And with the exception of the criticism concerning the problem of army labor or labor army in the Civil War, that Gramsci was right about is wrong, this idea of Trotsky was wrong. The other questions that Gramsci point out are very, very, very influenced by this kind of approach. And these ideas have a little part of anti-theoricism, I could say. This idea of Trotsky like a guy who is thinking theory but not politics. This idea is it has a little bit of populism, of Soviet populism, was used by Bukharin, Zinoviev, Kamenev, and also Stalin in the debates between 1924 and 1926-27. A lot of these arguments were circulating in the communist parties because of the polemics against the opposition. So I think the possibility of linking Gramsci and Trotsky theories is about the theoretical contributions, but not exactly because of their political positions in the 1920s, especially because Gramsci was a defender of socialism in one country. Notwithstanding, he was critical about the bureaucratic methods. Okay, so the image that Gramsci drew about Trotsky in the notebooks is wrong, and we should read Trotsky a superficial reading of Trotsky would allow us to see that Gramsci criticism were wrong. Okay.
Yeah, and jumping right off of that, if you go past just saying that Gramsci misread Trotsky, you actually go further and argue that there are some really a key point of overlap between the way the two were thinking, particularly on how revolutionary struggle plays out. Could you maybe speak to that? You don't think there's like a 100% overlap between their theories, but you think there are kind of these key points where they kind of link up and are trying to address the same problem. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Okay, I will try. I think hegemony and permanent revolution both are about the necessity of establishing a dynamic in which the social struggle goes beyond some boundaries or some limits, okay? Not every struggle isolated. So I'm of the trade unionist movement, so I ask for this. I'm of in the women movement, so I ask for this demand. So, incluso I'm in the migrants movement, which is a workers movement, but with specific demands. So we're fighting for that, but not for the same demands of the rest of the people, okay? I think the trade unions bureaucracy, it's a very important factor to make this division. So we only fight about our income, our working conditions, and no more. So the movements have to take an independent way, separated of the rest of the movements. I think the both hegemony and permanent revolution are theories which can allow us avoid this kind of division. Thinking in another possible dynamic of the class struggle, trying to make class struggle unify the working class with all oppressed sectors and go beyond the capitalism, thinking in an egalitarian society, a communist society. The difference between Gramsci and Trotsky is more located in some emphasis. Gramsci thought more about the national dimension of the politics, and Trotsky always thought in an internationalist way. Trotsky was respectful of national traditions, but he always thought that a Russian working class didn't owe anything to the Russian past. Okay? And I think this difference between Russia and Italy, which because in Italy there was a more important cultural continuity between past and present, which is not in Russia. This different approach to the national question is one of the most important differences between Trotsky and Gramsci. But both theories are thinking about the same problem, which is now a very strategical problem, the problem of unifying the class struggle and all kinds of progressive struggles to fight in order to change the structures to change the society, not only some politics or some aspects of this system. So I think this is the more important overlap between the both theories.
Yeah, moving into the last chapter of the book, you kind of step out from just working through their works to try and understand how these two figures have been received. And we kind of touched on this at a couple points, but I particularly want to hone in on you spend some time with, I think you mentioned it already, Saccarelli's book, In the Shadow of Stalinism, where he argues that the shadow of Stalinism is much broader than many academics might assume, because often they have picked up Gramsci's misreading of Trotsky to his denigration, as well as, you know, over-theorized Gramsci and kind of missed his own militant politics. I'm wondering if you could, you know, maybe tease this out a little more. And you mentioned Laclau and Mouffe maybe as kind of one of the most famous examples and a very influential example. That book is in footnotes everywhere for some time afterwards. So could you maybe speak a little more to that?
Okay, I think there's a very important problem in not only in the academia about the over-representation of approaches about Gramsci and the almost total absence of Trotsky. But I think there's a broader, a wider problem, okay? Which is the force of the, la fuerza de la costumbre, we say in Argentina, the force of the costume, the habit, okay? This idea of every Marxist tradition, which is isolated from others, okay? So people who study Gramsci doesn't read another thinkers and think, okay, which is the relationship between this guy and another, and this another, okay? In Trotskyism is something usual also. In Trotsky's movement, it's very common that the people, not only militants, rank and file militants, but also intellectuals or academics, only read Trotsky, maybe talk about another things in academia, but not in the party, okay? This division is very common. So I think there is a very important problem, which is now we must not only think about the problems of everyone's tradition, but also in a kind of generic way of Marxism. We must think about the problems of Marxist theory going beyond the boundaries of each tradition, trying to, without abandoning the core of a tradition, okay? I'm still considering myself Trotskyist, but I think we can better understand Trotsky if we understand Gramsci, okay? And also if we can study the thought of another Marxist thinkers, for example, Luis Althusser or Manuel Sacristán, who thought about the problems of the class struggle in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, okay, we can understand better the situation of Marxism. And I think this overlap, this attempt to make a relationship between, in this case, Trotsky and Gramsci, is trying to do this, okay? We must think not only reproducing our own traditions in the left, but also going beyond the limits, the boundaries. We must to think, trying to use all the theoretical production of different Marxist tendencies to think the problems we must face today. I think the main problem is here, and because of that, it's very common that in Gramscian studies, people doesn't make the work of read Trotsky and see if the Gramsci's criticisms was right or wrong. Okay, this this little circumstance is linked to this big problem of the question of how we can reconstruct the Marxist theory today, not only in the economic crisis explanation, but also in the political theory, okay?
Yeah, so as a way of tying off this conversation, I'd like to ask, how do you hope this book helps people rethink what political struggle will look like? Because you are looking at a couple figures who have not traditionally been read together and trying to find points of overlap as a way of rethinking what political struggle might look like. And especially in a time, I know in the United States, we are now seeing kind of reanimated class struggle in many other parts of the world. There seems to be kind of a re-emergence of kind of an understanding that class is kind of a major defining feature of our society. And as you said, you know, especially among young people, the youth kind of don't live under that shadow of, you know, the Cold War. And so they're kind of able to revisit some of these ideas and political orientations with kind of a new set of eyes. How do you hope people who come to your book, you know, how do you hope it helps them reorient and better understand what they're trying to do in their own particular situation? What do you hope it gives them?
Okay, I think the capitalism is increasingly violent and predatory. We here in Argentina, we are looking with a lot of enthusiasm the process of organization, for example, in Amazon. We think this is a very, very important fact. Maybe I think my personal thought, this is one of the most important events in the history of workers' movements in the last decades, okay? And I think it's very important to retake the discussions about hegemony or permanent revolution in order to make another strategy, a strategy which is beyond the separation of struggles, okay? We are not agreeing with this United States discussion between identity politics against bread and butter. This has it has no sense, okay? No, doesn't make sense. Make sense. I think if this book has some use, should be to think in this way, trying to rethink the problem of the class struggle, not only like an economic struggle separated of other demands and not opposing the struggle in terms of class with the other problems, the other demands of movements like women, migrants, the ecologist movement, and others, okay? I think the main attempt to make a contribution in this book has to do with that. And we're trying to make some discussion in political terms with left voice in the United States.
Yeah. Well, Juan, thank you so much for coming on. I understand English was a challenge for you, but I very much appreciate you coming on and talking to me.
Thanks. I apologize for my horrible English. Thanks a lot.